department. It's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who would be perfect for the David tribe, the Larry David tribe. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our kickoff special for Survivor 37, and I'm very excited to have with us a great guest to talk about this 37th season of Survivor. Please welcome the great Mike Bloom.
Hey, Rob. I'll admit, though, based on Jeff Probst's various assessments of Hot Cop Dan so far, I might have to change my name to Goliath in Bloom just for this one season.
Yes, you already stepped on my first joke.
I think we have a Goliath in Bloom.
That's the closest, by the way. I won't get the full Wiggler, but that's probably the closest I'll ever get to being mentioned on Survivor, and it's just by my last name coincidentally falling into one of Jeff Probst's key turns of phrase.
I was besides myself this morning when I was listening to Josh's very impressive third outing of First One Out, the first episode of the third season of First One Out. And I heard Jeff Probst say those words, and I immediately...
I think we have a Goliath in Bloom.
I thought he was talking about you. I was like, oh, look at Mike, last name treatment.
Surprise, 21st castaway. I'm the true both David and Goliath. Though I do like his terminology as well, because we have, you know, the Goliath in Bloom, which is sort of built up as like a Goliath who is sort of coming into their own. But is there an opposition? Is there like a David deflowered? Someone who like started in a big position, but sort of the bloom fell off the rose, to use another turn of phrase involving my last name?
Well, a David deflowered? So this is like a David who became more of a David? Is that what you're saying?
Or a Goliath who then became a David.
No, Jeff said you can't. Jeff told Josh you can't go back from being a Goliath to a David. I guess you can go from being a David to being a dud. I guess like a David is like, haha, I'm the best version of this scrappy underdog. And I guess you can go from you were almost a David, but you're back to a dud. But you cannot go from a Goliath to a David. Impossible!
That street goes one way. Carl the truck driver can tell you all about orientations of various roadways. And apparently, David Street merges into Goliath Street, but you can't turn back on that or you're getting yourself a ticket.
Yes, you cannot be un-Goliathized.
It's a distinction that you now hold upon your shoulders, even if you don't want to be a Goliath. Even when Jeff Probst tells you you are a Goliath, you say, no, hold up, bro, I do not consent. You have this title for life, essentially.
Once you go Goliath, you never go Belieth, okay?
Go Belieth. Yep, that's the key rhyme.
Mike, I've missed getting to talk Survivor. Here we are now, very close, sneaking up on 21 days away from the Survivor 37 premiere of Survivor David versus Goliath. A little bit of a short preseason here from Survivor and CBS.
Yes, more days between this and the season premiere as there are in Julia Preet's Years of Life. So that definitely is saying something. I mean, it's as a Survivor fan, it's been a really interesting off season. I don't even know if I can call it an off season because as a diehard fan, I know I have been subsisting myself on all of these great international seasons between New Zealand, South Africa, Australia is still going. I guess it's the equivalent of like building up to this bigger marathon where I'm running a bunch of 5Ks in between. Of course, I have no experience as to what that might actually mean, but
what are you talking about right now?
Mike, running is the process.
Interestingly enough, so there are 20 people, 20 days until the season starts. Give me something that I can do on Twitter once a day for each of these castaways between now and the premiere. What can I do to make my own Survivor 20-day advent calendar of counting down to David versus Goliath?
I'm so glad you asked, because David versus Goliath is a biblical name, right? It pulls from a biblical story, which makes sense given Mark Burnett and his propensity to sort of put out, franchises around the good book. But I think what you can do is, even though we have David versus Goliath as sort of the umbrella, take one of these people, every day and put them into a Bible story.
I'm not the right person for that, Mike.
What?
I am not the biblical scholar. I don't know if we have one on the RHAP network of podcasts.
Yeah, I would say about half of us are ruled out because we only know one specific half of the Bible.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, that maybe by the end of this podcast, we can come up with what my tribute will be to each of these cast members here, whether it is a movie, a haiku. I don't know what it necessarily is going to be.
I know one person on the staff who would be great at writing haikus for these people.
Yes. Who would that be?
Well, I think it might be someone who was name-checked by Mr. Christian here. I think you might want to get Stephen Fish back. You know, he's getting out of the freeze chamber here. You're warming him back up again. This would be a great way to get the creative juices flowing.
See, now, I thought you were making a reference to Mike White, and my head was going, oh, maybe I need an emoji of the day for each
Ooh.
One of the castaways.
The survivor mojo. I like that.
All right. That could be it. That could be my 20-day countdown of the survivors emoji a day for each castaway. All right. So, Mike, we've got a lot going on just at the top of the show. This is the first of our Survivor preseason podcasts. Hopefully, we will have much more, including Josh Wigler's first one out. This was the first of four episodes of First One Out that was dropped in your podcast feed. To be subscribed to everything we're doing here on RHAP, if you're a new listener, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. That's everything that we are doing, including everything with Big Brother and Beyond. That's where I shop for all my towels, Mike. Big Brother and Beyond.
You should not pick up those towels, considering what Big Brother might have been doing to them.
Get a great green loofah there as well at Big Brother and Beyond. That's our main podcast feed. Hey, if you're saying, like, listen, Rob, you take your Big Brother and stick it where the sun don't shine, okay? I am only here for the Survivor. You can subscribe to our Survivor-only podcast feed, where you will not only hear Rob as a podcast, but you will also hear great shows like the Survivor B&B with Mike Bloom and Liana Boris.
Yes, only slightly cleaner than BBN Beyond, but we take pride in that.
Yes, also Why Blank Lost with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis as well. That's all in our Survivor-only podcast feed. You can get that at robhasawebsite.com/Survivor Podcast. And we really do appreciate your feedback and star ratings here at the start of a new season, because it helps more people find the show here at the top of the season. All right, Mike, we're just a little David podcast that could. Okay, and here we go.
We are definitively the Goliaths. Now, look, I think you and I might consider ourselves Davids just in our day-to-day, but I think the fact of the matter is, considering what Jeff Probst assigns David and Goliath here, I think RHAP has been hashtag winning for quite some time. So I think you can put your podcast in the Goliath category, and by the rules of Goliath, this will never be a David
podcast. But I don't feel like a Goliath.
Again.
I feel like that, I'm just out here working all the time. This hasn't been easy to get to this point.
Rob, trust me, RHAP is a Goliath in bloom. Take that from a bloom.
I think we have a Goliath in bloom.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about some of our top stories at this hour for this brand new Survivor season. Of course, that there have been bios dropped. We have seen on CBS's YouTube channel. We get a little David cast preview. We get a little Goliath cast preview. Of course, Josh's fantastic work on location in Fiji in First One Out. What else have we gotten to see revealed today, Mike?
We also have some coverage, and granted, at the day we're recording this, you know, the day of the cast release, we still don't have the individual cast videos yet. We do have, as you mentioned, some fantastic B-roll, some of Corinne's, you know, prime material to use in her cast assessment, which did not disappoint. Just to be a bit tangential, I think my favorite might have been Carl astride a big old log. And Carl also, ironically enough, is on a tribe with a guy who loves Rick Grimes, so hopefully that turns out well for him. No spoilers for Walking Dead, but I love him sitting on the log and pretending like he's driving a truck. Like he's one of those kids who has like the play school steering wheel next to like the actual steering wheel on the side of the car. But besides all that, we did get some E.T. Canada coverage. I believe the one and only Arissa Cox, good friend of the podcast, got an interview with Jeff Probst talking about the season.
Yeah, okay, so we have a lot of stuff, so always great to see Arissa branching out beyond just the Big Brother Canada. She's now talking Survivor as well, so this is a very exciting development, Mike.
She could and she did.
Yes. All right, Mike. So let's talk about our top stories at this hour. And I guess we have to begin here with the theme, David versus Goliath. That is very much front and center. We get a very thorough explanation from Jeff talking with Josh in First One Out. What's your reaction to David versus Goliath?
It's always interesting to sort of see how we perceive the theme initially at first glance versus how, you know, the show perceives it, especially with these versus seasons, which I feel like at this point we're sort of getting once every other season, it seems, between Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, Millennials versus Gen X, the various iterations of Brain, Beauty, Brawn. So Jeff, as you said, explains that for him, it's kind of, for lack of a better term, it's sort of a battle of privilege. Almost, where the Davids sort of come from this, hot button issue, but the Davids sort of come from this background where they have had sort of, they've had elements to work against, whether they're financial obstacles, whether they're family-based obstacles, whether they're career-based obstacles, but they have always, you know, fought against the current, whereas the Goliaths are sort of the ones in the canoes that are paddling, and not to impugn them and say that, you know, they haven't worked a day in their lives, but they come from backgrounds that might inform them to, you know, have their success be based on certain liberties that they're able to take. And Jeff sort of used the examples of, you know, there might be a couple of head scratchers in this, but you have people that, you know, are might be able to get by because of their looks or because of their brains or because of their brawn. So we're sort of combining all three of those tribes in on one.
Yes. It was the people that have it all.
It's a microcosm within a microcosm. A lot of people were saying they were the full package this season, so I guess it makes sense. But, you know, I decided to not pay mine until I actually saw the cast to see, like, okay, let's see how these people were sorted. And now looking at it, and this will, we'll definitely talk about it later, how they're going to stoke the flames of this theme, but I actually like the way they're doing this because it feels like, for the first time in a while, they're really setting up these tribes to be antagonistic towards mm-hmm. one another. And granted, we got this a bit in Millennials versus Gen X when you have Paul Wachter musing about drones delivering milk. But that was basically all we got. This seems like an opportunity. I mean, really setting up one of the most famous, you know, battles in biblical history. It's essentially to say, hey, you guys are going to duke it out, even though we might swap in, you know, episode 4 or 5. I think it's a really fun way to sort of set these groups against each other if they're really going for this tribal warfare that Mark Burnett was really trying to go for in the very beginning of the show, that it's our group versus theirs. I think this is a good way to sort of beeline to that.
Yeah, I don't mind David versus Goliath, the theme so much. I mean, I would prefer it. I think it might have been cool to see it be people that are sort of like, smaller people versus bigger people. Like, I feel like that you have some people that are like the, you know, ideal Goliaths that are sort of out in front, like John and like Natalie. Like, they sort of like really embody just Goliath in like a physical sense. I think that would have been cool. When we start to get into like, well, they're metaphorical Goliaths, I think we lose it, the thread a little bit. Like, I get what Jeff is saying, and he referenced the Malcolm Gladwell book, David and Goliath, which I actually think I will reread to sort of get in the mindset of
That's
all of this.
That's your homework, Rob. You have 20 days.
I love that stuff, so I'll be very excited to do it. But the narrative of what constitutes a David, because I think that 99.99% of the people that watch the show, everybody identifies with being a David, where unless you are somebody like John Hennigan, who's like embracing the role of, yes, I am the villain, I am a wrestler, of course I'm a Goliath, I'm a Mr. Spectacular, I'm the I'm a Goliath, sure. But, and, you know, every other person that is watching the show, and it sounds like that most of the contestants, you know, fancy themselves as Davids.
Yeah, well, it's very akin to heroes versus villains.
Nobody believed in me. I did it all myself. I'm a David.
Well, yeah, and Jeff, I believe, tells that story on First One Out where, you know, Allison speaks up in particular, Dr. Allison, and says, like, hey, you know, I had to work on building this practice. But then once her and Jeff sort of talk about it, and she talks about how, you know, she comes from a background in upper class family, and, you know, her father was a doctor before her, then maybe, I guess, if you're going with this sort of loose definition of a Goliath, it might fall in there. And I agree that, you know, it's a weird sort of loosey-goosey way of defining things. And I will say, you know, it's also interesting as well of, I agree that I think that, I wonder if this is going to reflect in the editing as well, how much the David's tribe is going to be sort of filled with positivity, that we're sort of, these are the audience analogs. But I will say, on paper, I wonder how many challenges the Davids will win before a swap. They are wearing orange, Rob, which has not bode well in Fiji as of late.
You know, there is that physicality from a couple of people on that Goliath group, but are they that badly outgunned, Mike?
I mean, I don't know. You have, you know, two guys over 40. They're not too, you know, be ageist at all. But I think, you know, if you, I agree that I think the physicality.
What's wrong with over 40, Mike?
That's true. I know I'm you can answer that. I think you could answer that question in a couple months, Rob. But I think that, you know, I think that they might be outmanned in terms of between John and Dan, just those two. If there's something as simple as, hey, pull this rope, I think they sort of have them beat. But I also have something on my mind that harkens back to, and I apologize, we're going to be talking about a bunch of international Survivor because there are apt comparisons here. You know, the current iteration that's going on right now is champions versus contenders. Mm-hmm. And people have sort of thought about that as, okay, this is sort of going to be the, you know, the test balloon for how this theme works. And spoiler alert for the first half of Australian Survivor, be sure to tune out for the next, like, 30 seconds if you don't want to know how the season has gone so far. The contenders got kind of demolished pre-merge. Yeah. And part of it was their own, you know, strategic follies, but part of it was also that there were challenges that were just so physical, and they're going up against, you know, people who are known for their physicality and former pro athletes and Olympians that they just got completely blown out of the water. So maybe that's sort of why it's at top of mind for me.
Yeah, I do think that there is a little bit of a difference, and I think I do like the Australian idea a little bit more, where that's more of like people that have accomplished a lot in their field versus people who are basically newcomers or fans. I think that that actually makes a little bit more sense. I think where I don't like the Australian idea was that there are like five or six people that are from the world of professional athletics. And so you ended up with, you know, it being really stacked in terms of having a lot of athletes on that tribe, where they really leaned into, you know, sports champions that ended up being in the Australian version of the show. But I think that if they would have framed David versus Goliath as people that have like really accomplished a lot, I feel like that is a clearer way to say what they're trying to say.
And I also have confidence in them sort of evening things out because of, and Jeff seems like, I don't know if Jeff went on like a self-help retreat, like on a walkabout between 36 and 37, but I feel like he has approached 37 with like almost a new philosophical way of looking at the show. I know there was that interview earlier on in the summer with Dalton Ross where he says, like, I sort of had this epiphany where I realized that we create the show not necessarily for the people watching, but for the people actually playing the game. But he walked into this season with Josh and he says, you know, we're thinking about, you know, not who has the advantage, what is the advantage? And I wonder if, on the note, again, of this first challenge they're going to do, if we're going to see them sort of mix things up more to sort of play towards people's, you know, skill sets, their thing, if you will, your Ashley Nolan-esque thing, to sort of not make it necessarily like, hey, it's going to be brute physical force or it's only going to be a puzzle. In true Survivor style, they're going to try to mix everything up to hopefully even out the challenges as well.
Yeah, well, Survivor is a pretty deep show, Mike. I don't know if you know this.
I think, you know, we've had psychology in Survivor. I think we need, like, the Tao of Survivor, the Thai of Survivor.
Yes, yeah. All right, well, we'll save that for another day, Mike. So that
all right,
is basically
July 10th, 2019, put it in the books.
And if you're not a fan of this theme, blame Survivor Pat Cusack, because apparently he was the inspiration.
Pat is the, I mean, he is sort of the alpha, the omega. here. Apparently, as Jeff says, he walked in and they, you know, he sort of told his life story, which has this really horrifying yet beautiful life story about, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, living with a paralyzed mother. I'm sure it'll be much more expounded upon when we get to him in First One Out. And Jeff sort of thought, like, okay, this is a guy that sort of has to fight from the bottom every day of his life. Though it's interesting, I was reading back again in that aforementioned interview with Dalton Ross, and he credits the idea to completely different people than Pat. So I don't know what caused, like, the epiphany, but it seems like some other people might have been credited with the inspiration here.
Okay, well, maybe one day we'll find the true origin story of David versus Goliath. All right, in First One Out, a big part of what Josh is talking about is the weather. The rain should be a major factor here in Fiji, as it looks like the Survivor Islands are going to be pummeled by inclement weather, Mike.
Yes, James Clement weather is coming to dig all your graves. It's too bad, Rob, that they already named a merged tribe Dang Rain, because it sounds like it would really apply here as well. I think, what's it called? Typhoon Josie, I think, is what Josh said. Maybe I'm mistaking here.
Typhoon Mary, I think.
No, that will hopefully not.
No.
Who's Mary? But I think that, you know, it sounds pretty brutal. You know, again, from the way Jeff described it in this Dalton Ross interview, it doesn't sound like, you know, while it may wear down people, it sounds like from what he was saying, since there were so many fans in this game, it almost fueled their fire in an odd way to be like, yeah, we're on Survivor, we're soaking wet, we're getting the full experience. But, I mean, I can only assume how many of those scenes we're going to get where, like, everyone's hands are chapped in white and, like, they can't feel anything. It's got to be absolutely rough out there, and I wonder if it's also going to affect the challenges as well. You know, I don't know how much stuff is actually going to happen in the water if there's all these cyclones and typhoons going on.
We will have to wait and see in that, and hopefully that we have the bad weather at least have some breaks in it, because I think that it does stifle the gameplay to some degree, because everybody is basically all under the shelter together, so there's a very little opportunity for you to go and, you know, make your alliances and have your side conversations. That's one of the main problems when it rains. Everybody is just all huddled together, so it's very difficult to have the conversation like, hey Mike, all right, let's go, who are you gonna vote for tonight, what are we doing, like, who's the plan, you know. You end up with everybody just all in one group.
Yeah, I mean, it's I remember there's a Survivor Samoa episode where Foa went to, like, their umpteen tribal council, and they could literally do nothing. It was a torrential downpour, and so they just sat in the shelter silently. And it was interesting. We sort of got, like, introspective confessionals from each of them, thinking about who they were going to vote out. But to your point, and you experienced this firsthand, quite literally playing in a rainforest, when you don't want to go outside, I think it definitely stifles, you know, being able to pull people away and talk to them. And who knows, maybe that leads to, you know, more erratic gameplay where there wasn't necessarily a plan going in. Maybe it leads to more conservative gameplay where people just say, okay, you know, we can't really plan any big things because we can't get out of the shelter. Maybe we'll have someone pull a Russell Hand and say, these are a bunch of babies, as they, you know, they chop wood, or the other Russell and exert themselves and collapse in the middle of a challenge. But I do agree that, like, for the survivor's sake, I really hope there's at least some sunshine going on, because I don't want them to have dour moods either. I feel like that contributes to sort of a Debbie Downer season as well.
Yeah, we'll see. There was a lot of torrential downpour and the typhoon that came through during Millennials versus Gen X, where those survivors had to be evacuated. So it did have an impact in the beginning of that season, but wasn't as much of a factor later on. So hopefully everybody is able to continue to play their games out there and not have to worry too much about the elements. I think you like a little bit of weather on Survivor, but, you know, you don't want it's boring to watch so many days of rain.
Yeah, absolutely. It's we don't want Survivor to get rained out, basically. We don't want we don't want, like, the 4 o'clock movie to get to come on instead of Survivor due to a rain delay.
Okay, let's talk about some of these people in the cast. Mike, we have a couple of notable names. Probably the person who is the most well-known, would you say, is it Mike White or is it the wrestler?
I mean, from my point of view, I think one definitely takes precedence over the other. So I can't really say objectively. I think within the CBS reality trifecta, I would say Mike White is the more notable name.
All right. Mike White is here, the screenwriter who wrote School of Rock famously. He is here in Survivor 37. Mike, do you remember his famous Survivor contribution?
Yes. So Mike White, for those of you that don't know, is a friend of Jeff Probst. And from what we found out, Season 29, Blood vs. Water 2, another versus, was going to have Redemption Island in it, much like its OG iteration. However, Mike White, I think, had dinner with Jeff Probst in the middle of planning the season. He just sort of offhandedly said, like, you know, oh, Jeff, what's going on with this new season? He says, well, we're doing Blood vs. Water again. We're doing Redemption Island. Mike says, oh, no, I hate that. No, I don't like Redemption Island. So if you want to, you know,
I don't even know if he said that. I feel like that the story is he was told about the Redemption Island and he basically did like a something to that effect. And Jeff's like, oh, you don't like it.
And, well, and, I'm glad Jeff gauged an expression better than Scotty did.
Yeah. No, but did we get robbed of one of the pre-jurors from Survivor, Sam Wandel Sir, coming back into that game? I mean, could we have had underdog David Wentworth come back into the game? Could Dale have come back? Even, dare I say, Drew Christie?
Or dare you say John Rocker?
Yeah. Or even
or Val?
Nadia.
Yeah, there was a pretty powerful lineup. But I mean, I'm with Mike White. I'm definitely not a... I think Redemption Island can certainly work in dramatic purposes, but I'm not really a fan of it in the game in general. So I come in with already positive thoughts about Mike, you know, between his work in School of Rock and Enlightened. I'm glad that, you know, Jack Black didn't come on and replace him at some point in the process of getting on the show. I really liked him on The Amazing Race with his dad. They were pretty much like the comic relief of the season. They were so dry and deadpan together that, you know, I was so excited to see them come back. They did not fare so well their second time out, primarily, I think, because his dad was getting up there in the years by the time they came back the second time around. But they were still really fun to watch. And you know, the crown jewel on top of that is that he's responsible for doing away with Redemption Island possibly forever. Now, we could be telling a different tale, though, when both of us are interviewing Mike White at some point, and he says, oh, I could really use Redemption Island out there.
Yeah, you ruined it for everybody. But I don't mind the Redemption Island in the first half of the game. It's when, you know, when somebody comes back late in the game is when I don't like it. But it is fun to imagine that alternate reality where somebody did come back in San Juan del Sur. So here he is. I think he might have really upset somebody who worked at CBS Publicity, because it seems like they have like the most bizarre photo of him for the cast photo. He does not appear to have his eyes open, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think his face is already part of a meme on the Survivor subreddit that's like, you know, when you pregame with Ozzy at the bottom text. Yeah, I mean, I think that we could definitely pull Lorenzo Lamas here and circle our laser pointer around some of these photos because they're certainly interesting. But I would bet that this is poor Mike White's best photo from the afternoon. I think he unfortunately was just caught like looking at the sun at a certain time when it was on the horizon. And as a result, he can barely get those baby blues open.
Interesting photo. I don't know if Mike's going to use this as his new headshot. I doubt it.
No, I mean, I also would not make a headshot of you shirtless. I think that's I don't know too much about Hollywood, but I don't know if that's like one of the cardinal rules.
A lot of these survivors going with these shirtless headshots after the fact, believe me.
That is not a headshot. It's a body shot. Not to be confused with other body shots that might be involved with the Alex line of work.
All right. Let's talk about another notable name in this cast. WWE standout. Do they still call them superstars? John Hennigan.
Yes, John Hennigan, Johnny Mundo, Johnny Nitro, Wednesday Night Fright, Mayor of Slamtown, Breaker of Chains, first of his name, Khaleesi of the Great Glass Sea, Johnny Bananas, Johnny Come Lately, Johnny, yes, Papa. He's here. He's entering the ring.
Mike, do you have high hopes for John Hennigan?
I actually have high hopes for him as a character.
It seems like no hangover from Hennigan's. I don't believe.
No, I don't think so. I think he's, despite being a hen again, I think he's ready to be the rooster here and completely dominate the tribe. And I think, you know, when you enter Survivor where your profession is essentially like putting on a show and playing a role. I know that we often say Survivor breaks you down to who you are as a person, but I think that if his career is sort of to entertain generally, you'd have to imagine some of that just sort of osmosis is his into his bloodstream. So he's always sort of that entertaining. That being said, we'll see how long that, you know, body oddy oddy ass lasts in those bad elements. And I would not be surprised if he's one of those guys who just sort of crack under his big muscles, a la Garrett Adelstein. But I'm really excited to see how he handles things. And I feel like if we're talking about who's going to stoke the flames of the David versus Goliath, you know, relationship antagonism, look no further than the mayor of Slamtown here.
Right. Now, he is coming into the game and he is not going to hide that he has this background as a wrestler. And I guess it could go either way, but I don't really expect it to go great.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. I mean, I could definitely see him become like, I could see him fall into the position of the Goliath saying, oh, you know, we got to keep him around because he's big and strong. And we know that if we even have one-on-one matchups in some of these challenges, we know he's absolutely going to take everyone out. A very Chris Hammonds, you know, like physical build. But at the same time, if these Goliaths hit the beach ready to ski and they say, I'm a winner for a reason, you know, I want to get them before they get me. And John is starting to play the heel a bit too much on his tribe. I could see the potential of him possibly getting blindsided early, but I have high hopes for Hennigan right now.
Mike, the history of Survivor wrestlers is not a great one. I think that the only other notable Survivor wrestler that we have in terms of actual people that have wrestled before they went on the show, Antonio's distant relative, Ashley Massaro.
Listen, as long as John Hennigan doesn't have bolts in his ankle that fall out during a challenge, he might be okay. And how dare you, Rob, forget your own friend Johnny Fairplay in the list of famous Survivor wrestlers.
And of course, my other friend Jenna Maraska, famous wrestler.
That's true. Yeah, we're really lowering the bar here in terms of Survivor wrestlers. But yeah, this might be the most high-profile wrestler. I think him and Mike were the two big names coming to this season. It's so interesting in that they both sought this out as well. It seems like, going back to what I said before, I believe that Jeff also credits the duality of Christian and Johnny Mundo as the David versus Goliath. So it seems like Johnny sought out you know, a spot on Survivor. And he's not a stranger to reality television. I believe he actually started his wrestling career because he won the third season of Tough Enough.
No, I didn't know that. So congratulations for another reality, maybe championship on the way.
Yeah, and now we truly have, you know, which is the better show, The Amazing Race or Tough Enough? We finally get that sort of meta game answered here, too. That's been waiting years upon years.
Yeah. Mike, who are some of the other standouts for you in this cast?
This is a really interesting cast overall. I think for those that have sort of been griping about the age of Survivor cast, especially Ghost Island, we promptly swung to the other side here.
What, we have an old cast?
We have, you know, I think Ghost Island had, what, like three people in their 40s? We have, I think, you know, four people here. We have one person in their 50s. Even it also just seems a lot more diverse as well in terms of ethnicity. I will say, from a geography perspective, as someone who recently wrote about, you know, Survivor players from states, from what I saw, it appears like we're only really pulling from like six areas of the country. Mm-hmm. But you know what? If it's a good crop of personalities, I don't really mind. But I really do feel like it's a very interesting group of people. It's very Ghost Island-like in terms of just everyone, and maybe it's because it's built inherently into the theme, but I feel like everyone just has a very interesting story as to how they got where they were currently in life. And we'll see, like Ghost Island, if those stories sort of come to the forefront in this new era editing of Survivor.
Okay, so let's do this, Mike. So I'm sure that, you know, just to throw a bone for everybody that's in this cast, okay, I have your article up from Parade.com, Mike Bloom's reactions to the new cast. Let's go through each person, and then let's talk about one thing from each person, okay?
That works.
Okay, here we go. We'll start with the David's tribe. We have here B Nguyen.
Yeah, so B, an MMA fighter. So I think that, again, if we're talking about the physicality discrepancy, B might be, you know, the strongest physical-wise for the women this season. And she also has this really interesting story that Jeff talks about where she also, you know, came from rural Vietnam. So I feel like she could do well. She just has a very interesting background, and she also has sort of the athlete's mindset to maybe, who knows, maybe her and John will sort of eye each other across the way and partner up.
Okay. What about Carl? Carl B.
Carl B. Carl B, the truck driver. I really hope he does well.
Second Carl B in Survivor history.
And hopefully he will not say he's a dentist and talk about the cars he has or the trucks he has parked in his driveway, which will cause people to vote against him. Carl's occupation just really interests me. I can't think of, have we ever had a trucker before on Survivor?
What about Sue Hawk?
Oh, I guess that's true. Maybe not since Sue Hawk. So if Carl's wandering around looking for tapioca, then we know that that's just the trucker's
way. Carl's
life.
Out here in the bush, then he knows what he's doing if he's not driving a truck.
Yeah, I mean, I like Carl. Carl's one of our over 40 guys. He's also a family man. We got a good number of parents out here this season as well, as opposed to, again, something like Ghost Island.
All right, let's talk about Christian Hubicki, who has gotten a lot of love early on in the first one out of it all.
Yeah, Christian, he's a robotics scientist. He is a diehard fan of the podcast. He even name checks Stephen Fishback as the contestant who he is most like. So we shall see how that bodes for him, given Stephen's second time out. We'll see how he does primarily with sticks. I think that'll be the gauge. He definitely has a very fun written bio, and he already has TV experience because he most recently got his robotics research mocked on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So I think he is totally going to be our like self-effacing narrator in these confessionals, I'm going to predict.
It looks like he's got a picture where his eyes aren't open either.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, maybe the glasses thing sort of happens. I don't know. I don't wear glasses, so I don't know if he
is
just
that a
feels
thing?
Like he doesn't.
When you wear glasses, you close your eyes in a picture?
Well, I mean, I feel like you don't need to necessarily open them as much to see, right? The glasses are doing the work for you. It's not like you have perpetual bug eyes when
that's
you're behind a
thing.
Pair of glasses. I don't know. Glasses people, chime in here. Do you feel like you can relax your eyes more when you're wearing a pair of glasses? Let us know.
That's one of the benefits for glasses, that you don't have to open your eyes all the way?
It's a fringe benefit. Listen, rest your eyes. Put on a nice pair of specs.
Oh, my eyes. Oh, I can rest them. I only have to open them part of the way. My eyelids. This is like a vacation. These glasses.
Listen, the other theory is that he's with Mike White pre-gaming with Ozzy. So I'm going to go with the less salacious idea.
All right. What about Davey Rickenbacker? Dalton Ross had tweeted out, hey, you got to check out Davey's personal claim to fame.
So let's read this out here. Davey's personal claim to fame, my online presence. I've always prided myself on my social media presence via various platforms. I wear my pages on my sleeve so as to say anything.
All right, so this is where I was confused. So he says he wears his pages on his sleeve. He's very proud of everything that's on them. Does he literally have, like, his Twitter name on his sleeve?
I mean, we've seen in
reality. Or is he being metaphorical of that? I'm very proud of everything I post on social media.
And would it be out of the question for him to post his handles on his clothing? I mean, he said that people stop him on the street. Maybe that's because they see his handle printed on his clothing. Now, the question is, will this producer let him bring that out to the island? Can he advertise his handles while
Can
he's
he
playing?
Do a swaggy C on Survivor?
Yeah, I don't know if social D. We'll see if it's a thing.
But he's very proud of his social media. I hate it. I mean, should we check it out? I mean,
I mean, I guess I hate Davey. This might become a recurring segment on the B&B as well. But yeah, I mean, Rob, he is a social media mogul, it seems.
A social media mogul. Let's see. I don't know. I hate Davey. Am I typing it in right? Is it like a one as a...
Well, his name is, I believe, Reality is an Illusion. So...
Oh, wait, so he doesn't have the same Twitter handle that he has on Instagram? What is this, amateur hour, Davey?
Well, his Twitter handle his Twitter handle is I Tweet Davey, so that's... I think he's just trying to
put verbs in
for
it doesn't make any sense, Mike. Why is I Hate Davey on Instagram? It's not I Insta Davey.
Oh, this is a nice precursor to eventually when Your Treats Are Trash comes up on Renap. I don't know how I feel about him putting in the verb for, you know, every page that I Yelp Davey. I guess it's a constant thing, but wouldn't you want to keep the same handle throughout so that you're easier to sort of look up?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd be. Seems like that maybe. Was this? Is he bragging or is he plugging?
Can he do both? Is there such a thing as a brag plug?
Okay, let's see. I'm very confused. Is this right that he has 25 followers? Is that, was this like did he delete social media right before this? This is very confusing.
I think that's, considering some of the articles that were written about these people preseason, I think that might have been the smart thing to do.
I don't hate Davey. I'm just saying I'm very confused that this was that when we talk about my claim to fame, like I was expecting like this great social media presence.
Well, maybe he's manifesting it. Maybe he's saying like this is what I want to be.
It will be my claim to fame.
Exactly, my future claim to fame. He's a David. He's working his way up. He's truly showing
he's
a Davey.
That's right. Even though he hates Davies.
Yeah, and that's the other thing as well. You couldn't do a season called David versus Goliath, and if you have someone whose name sounds like David, if you make them a Goliath, that's just going to confuse everybody.
Okay. All right. We'll see where we go from here. And he loves The Walking Dead. Okay. What about Elizabeth, Mike? I heard that Elizabeth is ready to give a big FU to those Goliaths out there.
Well, it's so interesting, Rob, that we talked about Mike White and, you know, Johnny Mundo as the two big faces out there. How little we forget Scarlet Witch herself, Elizabeth Olsen, is on this season of Survivor.
Who is Scarlet Witch, Mike?
That is a member of the MCU. She's played by Elizabeth Olsen, sister to Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. She has an implacable Eastern European accent, so she's known for that. And her Marcy Mary May, I don't know, the movie that has as many names as Johnny Mundo. But yeah, Elizabeth Olsen, we'll see, I'm going to say maybe I'm going to count the number of times we're going to see her without a hat on this season on one hand, because apparently she never takes her hat off. But she is a woman who quite literally wears many hats as well.
Yeah. So the great when you see it, you'll poop bricks moment, maybe of all time today, happened when it was very quickly discovered that our Survivor 37 cast photo contains one really big Easter egg, Mike. And what exactly is it for people who haven't put their finger on it yet?
Yeah, I was going to say, of eggs, a pretty big bird landed this egg. So you have, you know, with the Survivor shots, they do the serious one and they do the fun one. And that's where we sort of got, you know, Jenna's long arm. I think we got JT not really making a fun face in Game Changers. And the one that came up this time is Elizabeth decided for some reason to flip off the camera. And it's sort of like, you know, the school photo where for some reason they didn't really review the photo and it happened to go to print. And that was the fun photo that got released is Elizabeth Olsen promptly flipping off every Survivor fan that's checking her out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that Survivor is going to be recirculating that photo for much longer.
No, I mean, hopefully not. Who knows? They might Photoshop her hand out and put in all five of her fingers to make it look like she's just doing a weird backwards wave.
Okay. All right, real quick, let's just keep going. I don't want to do the full cast preview. Gabby, what's one thing about Gabby?
Gabby is a self-proclaimed dork. She was in, you know, the cast preview. She talked about possibly having a panic attack out on the island. The Aubrey and Hannah comparisons sort of speak for themselves. I think both of them even tweeted about it. So we shall see. Both of them, you know, despite their, you know, neurotic types, did very well in their respective seasons. So we'll see if Gabby holds suit.
Okay. So she's new Hannah, who was new Aubrey?
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like the Pokemon evolution line.
Okay. All right. What about Jessica Preet?
So she is our youngest here at 19.
She is not most proud of her social media, right?
No, I would say not. I think a lot of people might have been making I Hate Jessica social media handle in the months in between. But she, you know, she's 19 years old. She's going to pull a Will and say that she's not. I think she is sort of touted herself as the surprising super fan, where I think she has watched a lot more of the show than she lets on. But considering, you know, how much the Michael Yerger fever is still running through the Survivor community, we shall see if it carries over to Jessica.
Okay. Let's go to Lyrsa. Am I saying that right?
I think it's Lyrsa.
Lyrsa. Lyrsa. Lyrsa.
But let me know if this reminds you of anyone, Rob. It's a shorter person with a Hispanic accent and a very outlandish personality. Does that remind you of anybody?
JC Mondawi.
Yes, but she has much more hair than he does.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, Lyrsha is a lot of fun. Even just in the conversation I got from Josh, she is a she touts Sandra as her inspiration, and I think that shows considering the number of curses she drops in her interview with him. But she's originally from Puerto Rico, so I just think I don't know how long she's going to last, but I want to see her for as long as I can because she just seems like a really fun personality.
Okay, what about Nick Wilson?
Yes, Nick Wilson. Nick Wilson even says on First One Out, you know, he is a patron of RHAP. Not to say that we're going to treat him with any kid gloves here. I'm sure that's the last thing he would like. He sort of has a big David story to him. Jeff salivates over the fact that, you know, he got this law degree, but he decides to sort of be this, defense attorney and sort of, help protect the weakened in a way. So he's going to be a very interesting person to watch. I think that, you know, his propensity for strategy, I mean, I think he says, like, I know this game from top to bottom. So we'll see if he becomes that super fan to really take reign of the Davids or to, you know, try to take reign of the Davids and fall off that horse, much like Elizabeth Olsen's sister.
Okay. Pat Cusack, Mr. David versus Goliath to you, Mike.
Yeah, so Pat is a maintenance man from upstate New York. And as I said before, he has this story coming in where he sort of like worked every day in his life. He has the oddest pet peeve where his pet peeve is cracking my knuckles. So I don't know if he's just a self-hater and that he's saying like one of my pet peeves is something that I do a lot. But, you know, he is also a family man. He says he's the most like Cochran, which if you looked at him at the outset, he doesn't necessarily
that's pretty solid
body
call.
That.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, also, saying, yeah, John Hennigan says that he's like Cochran too. Everybody isn't Cochran.
No, this is, it's yeah, this is a Cochran infested season. Yeah.
Mike White, he's
Cochran.
Like Cochran. Everybody else I've spent time with Cochran that I don't know if anybody else here is like Cochran.
No, I think the clone cringe season has become a thing. Like, I think it's been a while since, you know, he's been gestating. He went to a couple of Survivor finales and Jeff got some DNA. Now he has cloned them all and had them compete against each other. And, you know, it's not far away from the Survivor simulations you and I have done over the summer.
Yeah, all Cochran season. All right. Then let's talk about the Goliaths real quick. We talked about Mike. We talked about John. What about Alec Merlino?
Yes, Alec Merlino with the bringing back the DJ Pauly D hairstyle. We'll see we'll see how long that lasts, especially if he's without GTL. Definitely not the L on Survivor, considering you're wearing the same clothes day in and day out. He's definitely one of those head scratchers when it comes to the Goliath status, unless you go by Jeff's conventions that, like, you know, he's been able to do well because of his beauty. But I don't know. Bartenders, we saw one win a few seasons ago, so we'll see if that's a career path that bodes well for him, too.
What exactly is Goliath about Alec Merlino, who's coming into the game with $0 in his bank account, which, is not uncommon among survivors?
That's very true. It puts him,
that happens to be the most common denominator in most survivor bank accounts, okay?
Yeah, I would say that I think, like in The Bachelor back in the day, they used to make them put their shoe size on their bio. Maybe they should put in their bios for Survivor, like, what is your bank account going into the game right now?
Yeah, but what is his Goliath power?
I mean, I think it's just that, according to Jeff, he's a very good-looking person. I think Jeff says that he might be, like, the most charismatic person he's had in some time, had ever on the show. So we'll see if that translates over to the screen, or he just might say, F it.
Okay, so I can't wait to see Alec Merlonio. See if he can channel that inner Merlonio.
Yeah, if he can act like a stuffed animal to be the cuddle buddy of the tribe.
Allison, what do we know about Allison?
I mentioned her before. She is our physician here. She's the only person who says, like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have taken 2 months out of my life to go play Survivor. Mm-hmm. There are actual stakes here against sort of the anti-Alec here. She might have, for my money, my favorite bio of them all. Her three words to describe herself are hero, healer, and hustler. Her personal claim to fame is getting fifth place in her school spelling bee, which might be more so than, you know, Davey's 250 followers on Twitter. And she also when asked what three things would you bring onto an island, she just directly apes Dwight Schrute and just uses a quote for her answer.
Yes. What was the quote?
Physician's desk reference, hollowed out, inside waterproof matches, iodine tablets, beet seeds, protein bars, and a NASA blanket.
Okay.
But she does not mention Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which I believe completes the quote.
Okay. What about Angelina Keeley?
So Angelina, not the ballerina, she's the one who we saw on the preview at the end of Ghost Island, sort of touting how, you know, she went to Yale, she went to Stanford, she was elected student body president. I believe she's the first Latina in Stanford history to be student body president. So she's got a great head on her shoulders. I have a lot of confidence in Angelina. Granted, she could sort of play the quote-unquote know-it-all role and have it completely fall apart in front of her, but I do feel like she has, you know, the brains at least, and hopefully the social status that comes with that student body president
role. Why is that the know-it-all
role? Listen, I'm not Angie Kahn, so I don't make up the rules here.
Okay.
But hopefully she has experience with getting votes. I just hope she won't get too many over the course of the game until that final round.
Okay. Dan Rengering, who is our Goliath in Bloom.
I think we have a Goliath in Bloom.
And I think we're really comparable, right? Dan and I, we're really on the same scale there. So for those of you that don't know, this is the quote-unquote hot cop. I believe during a hurricane, what was it? It began with an I that happened last year. He sort of went viral. Was it discussed on News AF, the hot cop thing? Or was it only hot prisoners?
Only hot felon, I think. I didn't even know about hot cop.
Yeah, so his picture circulated around. I think, you know, he's a member of the SWAT team who was obviously, you know, patrolling his route. And I believe they said, like, hey, send in pictures of you on the route during the hurricane. And apparently they sort of trolled the pages, but it got to the point where he was sort of objectified by the internet. But Jeff sort of talks about how what makes him a Goliath in Bloom is that he has only recently come into this self-confidence. Apparently he lost a lot of weight and he's sort of coming to terms with this internet fandom, as it were. So this is really the closest we've seen to like having a memed person come onto the show. Not since Will Sims 2 have we seen a viral star on the show.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, just don't give him any sort of Gatorade that he'll hide in a hole in the sand.
Okay, Jeremy Crawford. What do we know about Jeremy?
Jeremy earning some comparisons to Bryce Isaiah by Mr. Josh Regler. So I'll be intrigued to hear when we get Bryce's requisite appearance how he feels about the comparison. He seems very well-spoken. He is the lawyer who will say he is not a lawyer. I believe Nick will as well. I think he's our resident New York City person, too. So
I'm going to go on Survivor and say I am a lawyer.
Just would it be reverse psychology? Would people not think you're a lawyer because you want to be upfront about being a lawyer?
Yeah, I think that's the move. I think that's the new emergent strategy. Go on Survivor, say you're a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. Because everyone will believe like, oh, why would he say that? Obviously, he's, you know, but maybe it puts you more of a target on you. Because like if he's saying he's a lawyer, he's hiding something even worse than a lawyer. I wonder what that could be.
Right. All right. So Jeremy, anything else about Jeremy that we know?
No, I'm excited to see what he's going to do, though, because he has the physicality and the lawyer stuff. I mean, again, we saw Wendell was someone who had that law background, and that made him very judicious and played very well in that social game in the end. So maybe he can make it 2-for-2 here.
Okay, Kara K.
Yes, Kara K. She's another one that's a little interesting. She has this cheerleader background, but now she's a realtor, so she's sort of like Michael and Chelsea combined into one. So yeah, we'll see how she plays. Well, she is another one that sort of sticks out of like, Okay, is she really a Goliath?
Is she a Goliath of cheerleading or Goliath of real estate?
Well, I would say Goliath of cheerleading. She's at the top of that pyramid there. She says she was, when she was on the San Diego, when she was on the San Diego Chargers, she was rookie of the year, MVP in 2014 and captain for 2 years.
Okay. All right. There's, Kara, the Goliath of cheerleading. And what about Natalia? What is she the Goliath of?
That is a good question. Natalia, I have to remember, Natalia might be one of those people. So Natalia is an industrial engineer. I think this is where Josh said, I'm trying to remember if she's the one who went to the Survivor Pop EW Fest and like sort of became obsessed with the show from there. She has this really interesting story where her father was an immigrant from Jordan. He came over when he was 18.
And then, Natalie. I like Natalie.
Natalie is a lot of fun. Natalie was definitely someone who... Yeah, I mean, listen, she's got the name. Natalie's almost always do well. Hopefully she's not the exception to prove the rule. If you're talking about, like, people who are Goliaths, she is definitively one. She has made a name for herself. She has, you know, a lot of distinctions. She was the first African-American in a corporate position in the LA Times. She launched the largest black-owned circulating newspaper on the West Coast. She also started a skincare line just in her spare time. She is the oldest person out there, and she does admit in the preview that she has a personality that can rub people the wrong way. I hope she'll endear herself to people because, man, I want to see her stick around.
Yeah.
Now, we know that about the cast, and I think we were reticent to see, okay, will there be several game elements that'll get, you know, brought up in the initial stages? And luckily enough, in Josh's article that he released today, we found out a couple of juicy tidbits. That's the stuff that's going on this season.
Yes, Mike, we have a new game advantage here in the season where we have, for the first time ever, the ability to cancel the hidden immunity idol. I know a lot of people have said they would like to see the hidden immunity idol canceled, but not probably exactly like this.
Yes, we'll cancel it with another advantage. That's what you meant, right?
Yes. All right. So this is interesting, though. We have the ability to cancel the idol. Jeff Probst describes it in great detail to Josh in First One Out and exactly how it's going to be played. Now, Mike, you and I have seen something similar to this play out in the 2017 edition of Australian Survivor. That, again, Australian Survivor 2017, spoilers ahead. But can you help me articulate exactly how that went down, because it was referred to as a super idol in Australian Survivor, correct?
Yeah, well, you know, internationally, things mean different things. Biscuits mean cookies, you know, all the Australian terminology. So, yeah, so this was referred to in Australian Survivor 2017 as a super idol, but it essentially had the same power here, which is that it was able to nullify one hidden immunity idol play. Now, I don't know if the American, you know, edition specifically took from that, but we'll get into the mechanics of how this one works. I like the American version much more than the way they did it in Australia. It ends up causing a big dramatic moment because it did get played. But, I mean, it was essentially a super, it was called a super idol because it was sort of played like a super idol, like a Tyler Perry idol, where, in this case, a woman, Annalise.
Yes, Annalise.
Hey, yes. Robin Eric, I just thought you could use a nice song from The Sound of Music.
No, we don't. No, we don't have time for that. Okay.
No, absolutely not. Let's not unscramble those lyrics to talk about that. But I mean, it did end up biting her in the ass, quite literally. Poor Annalise here. She ends up playing her idol. The person who had the super idol, Ziggy, stood up and said, "Not so fast. I'm going to cancel that idol play." So it was essentially just a way to cancel out the idols. But like a super idol, it was played after the votes. You had the advantage of knowing exactly when a person was going to play the idol and who they were going to play the idol on. So they were just able to quickly erase the idol play. Annalise went home, unfortunately. Yeah. What I really like about this iteration is that they've essentially equated it to, you know, a regular idol being used, where it is a gamble. The person who has to use the idol nullifier goes into the voting booth and decides right there, right then, if they're going to use it. They can't, you know, gauge if someone's going to play it or who they're going to play it on. They just have to take a shot in the dark, go with their best judgment, and determine if they're going to use it there. And if they use it correctly or incorrectly, that's a determinant to be found out a few minutes from then.
So my two thoughts on this is, one, I think that that is almost an impossible target to hit, because you not only have to call out the person who you think is going to play the idol, right? You also have to call out who they're going to play it for. Do I have that correct? So if we're at Tribal yeah. Council and I want to play my idol killer, I have to put it in when I vote and say, "I'm playing this idol killer against Mike if he plays his idol on Josh or if he plays his idol on himself." But if you go and you play the idol on Jessica Lease, then it doesn't cancel your idol. Do I have that correct?
That's correct. You have to pick not only the person who's, you don't have to pick the person who's playing the idol. You just have to pick the person who gets who's the recipient of the idol. And I don't know, I guess I need to look back as to how charitable people have been with their idol gifts. I know that Ty did that a couple times, but he was finding idols up the wazoo. I know we got it most recently in 36, where Wendell gave his idol to Laurel because, you know, he had immunity. And we saw it, I can't remember if we saw it in 35. We also need to remember as well that 35 is the most recent entire season that this cast has seen. And I wonder how much that's going to hold water when it comes to making certain decisions. And maybe that's one of them. They just saw Ben Dreebergen find, three idols in a row and help win the game because of that. I wonder if idol is going to be so on the front of brain that they say, okay, if this person's probably going to play the idol on themselves, let me just put it down there. I think, the emergent strategy would be just play it on the if you think someone has an idol, just play the idol nullifier on them, because I think there's a much smaller chance that they would actually use it on somebody else in that moment.
Right. That's great when you put it in the context of, you know, and Dr. Mike talked about this, about how there should be one round of voting where you can't just get through it with an idol. So if you were somebody who was frustrated by Ben found three idols in a row and then went on to make the fire and then got to the end and there was nothing the other players could do, I actually do think that this is something that's good in the interest of fairness, but in the interest of watching the TV show, that I think that they are hoping that people misplay this or people blow it so they have more moments of like, you idiot, look, you made the dumbest move in the history of Survivor. Because I think that most of the idol plays that you see in Survivor history, like the best case scenario is Kelly Wentworth idols, you know, Andrew Savage out of the game, and, you know, eight votes or does not count. And you go nuts. I mean, could you imagine then if you had like the underdog person who has the idol, it's the only thing that's going to save them, but the majority alliance has the idol cancel, and then they successfully are able to, you know, get the underdog out of the game. I just feel like that's going to be an unsatisfying moment for the viewers.
Right. I mean, that's essentially what Tyler Perry was saying during the Cagayan reunion, right? It was like, you can think one thing about a twist, and I might sour on the twist if it falls into the wrong hands from a satisfaction perspective, but from where I'm coming in right now, you know, I am all about avoiding another advantage get-in. I think the opportunity to cancel out an idol play, I think that's a good way to sort of avoid going down that road once again. And it is interesting, I agree, that, you know, playing an idol is a big move, and this, interestingly enough, is a big move to cancel out a big move. So does it sort of like, do two negatives make a positive in that regard?
Right. So it's very hard to shoot the moon on this, and so I think that might be what they're banking on, that people will play it and play it incorrectly, and so it will be another thing to be played at Tribal Council that will not pan out. But I think either that it's going to be an underdog who is trying to stay in the game, and the audience typically roots for the underdog, or if there's like some hated person who then plays an idol, and then I think that for the sake of the show, I think that they would want to keep the hated person on the show because they'd be an interesting character, then hated person could be gone because of that. Like, I think it's rarely going to be something that necessarily helps the story.
I don't know. I think that it has the potential to create a really big moment. Imagine for a second, like, if there's an alliance of five and one person has the idol and they say, okay, everyone, you know, I'm going to play my idol on this person tonight. The votes are coming their way. And you have this person on the bottom being like, I don't want to do this. I'm going to try to make a move here. And, you know, they flip over to the other side and they play the vote nullifier, the idol nullifier on that person because they know what the plan is. That's a way to remove an idol from the game and simultaneously be able to pull off a blindside as well. So maybe if they continue this throughout the game, I don't know if we'll see this in 37. I feel like if they keep this in the game, it has a really nice potential. And I really like, I know that you said it might not lead to actual success, but I really like the gambling element of it, the risk that you have to take. I like that more of these advantages are involving risks, like when Lauren Rimmer had to bank a vote, essentially, in order to cast an extra one. I like these things that say, okay, you can do this, but it comes with a bit of a price.
Mike, do we know, will the players know that this is in the game, or will this be another thing where that is going to be a surprise that there is an idol cancel put out there?
I would not be surprised if it was the latter, because that's sort of what we got with the legacy advantage, which I feel like was the last big recurring twist that was introduced in the game. Nobody knew what a legacy advantage was until Ken pulled it out and had to sort of explain it. So I would not be surprised if they wanted to, you know, keep this a surprise. Only one person knows about it, and they spread the information that they want to in order to really just get the big WTF faces of like, wow, I didn't know that thing even existed. Now, granted, that would be pretty unfair, but if we're in the business of creating television, it would create a nice gif-able moment, at least.
Okay. All right. Mike, I believe that is what we know about Survivor 37.
Yes. Those were the larger things. There are a couple of little things, like Josh wrote about the first challenge. There's not going to be a marooning this season. They're going to involve a David versus Goliath 2-on-2 showdown where the Goliaths pick two of their champions versus, and they pick the two who they think they are, the two weakest Davids are. And the Davids.
Is that what it's called? The David versus Goliath 2-on-2 showdown?
Yeah, it's a nice long name to really, you
I'll
know,
see
advertise
you in the David versus Goliath 2-on-2 showdown.
Oh, well, you know Johnny Mundo is going to be one of those, right? He's going to volunteer. He's going to try to be the Chris Noble and immediately, you know, step up and volunteer for that role. But it's interesting because they're going to have, you know, the two quote-unquote strongest Goliaths versus the two quote-unquote weakest Davids. But the Davids will get to sort of design this obstacle course. Yes,
they pick the death match.
Yes, yeah, they get picked for the death match, and so they get to choose whether they get to play, you know, 12 Jengi or if they get to do monorail. But basically, I think Josh put it well where he said, you know, the Goliaths choose the gladiators, but the Davids choose the weapons. So if that's sort of any sort of indicator, I'm hopeful to see if they sort of use that dynamic to vary up these other challenges. I know that back in like the early 30s, Jeff was talking about like we want to throw choice into some of these survivor challenges. So I hope they do more of that, because again, if it seems like we're getting more philosophical and heady with the game of Survivor, this is a fun way to sort of get in contestants' heads as to will you make the right decision. And again, it's a great way to sort of immediately pit David versus Goliath against each other if that's the theme you really want to, you know, blow up until it immediately deflates in the next 4 or 5 episodes,
like
the switch
a Tom
happens.
Brady football.
Exactly. And nobody's from New England on this cast, so they will not take umbrage with it.
All right. All right. Good. Hopefully none of the listeners will either, Mike. And so there you have it. Do we have a hashtag for today?
Look, this might be selfish, but I mean, considering it's your first sound drop of the official Survivor 37 season, Goliath in Bloom has to be it, right?
Okay. Goliath in Bloom.
I think we have a Goliath in Bloom.
Is that the working title of your autobiography?
God can only imagine what that autobiography is going to be. There should just be, there's going to be just the middle, I don't know, 11 chapters are just going to be called like the Man Whore Year. And then I don't know what else the other ones are going to bring.
Goliath in Bloom is the hashtag, narrowly beating out a Epatphany for the hashtag for this episode of the
good,
show.
Good.
Yes. Mike, where can people check out everything else that you're doing?
So you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type, where I keep everyone in the social media sphere abreast with all the stuff that I'm doing. Like Rob said, I recently gave my own thoughts, pun-laden thoughts, on the cast for Parade. I'll also be doing Exit Press there each and every week with the person who's been kicked off the show, as well as I'm currently doing running Big Brother 20 coverage there as well. I'll be coming out with a couple of pieces on The Hollywood Reporter in the next couple of weeks about adult animation. If you're an adult Whoa. Animation fan, I highly suggest you you check that out. I got to talk with creators from BoJack Horseman, Archer, Bob's Burgers, Rick and Morty, some of my favorite shows out there, you know, animated or live action. I'm always covering Survivor South Africa, which ended a few weeks ago, but we are still
covering
through
it.
Still covering it. Listen, this is it was a crazy season, and it really got me pumped on Survivor in the fall. So I got to acknowledge the aperitif that was Survivor South Africa. We're doing a bunch of great deep dives, including
the 2016 election called and said, boy, you guys are really still covering that Survivor South Africa.
It's a real witch hunt of when it comes to these deep dives, Rob. And tomorrow, actually, by the time we're recording this, we're talking with noted RHAP enthusiast Werner, the bus builder himself.
Yes.
So we'll find out if he's a David or he's a Goliath. I also just launched a new podcast project called The Guest List, where I collaborated with a friend of the podcast, Vic Shuddy. We went through every film in Christopher Guest's canon. He's one of my favorite directors out there with the mockumentary, and we sort of broke it down how it sort of plays today. So check that out on his Hail Satire platform. Other than that, if you're looking into old school Survivor as well, we are finishing up Survivor Samoa just in time to talk about a season 18 seasons after the fact. I, on the other hand, was a man whore.
Podcasting, man whoring around.
That's
so
the
much.
Pull quote from my yes. from my book jacket, by the way.
All right. Mike, the busiest man in podcasting. Oh, my God.
That's you're talking in the mirror, right?
All right. Mike, pleasure catching up. Always a thrill to get to talk to you. Of course, look for the RHAP B&B to return. Will there be more Big Brother B&B, BB B&B before the end of the season?
Yes, the BB B&B is actually going to be coming back next week. We'll be getting together with the great Ali Lasher, myself, and Liana Boris to talk through some of the, some would say, slower weeks, but still eventful nonetheless with Big Brother 20. And we'll be doing one at the very end of the season as well. We'll be pulling a U, Rob, simultaneously covering the beginning of Survivor 37 and the end of Big Brother. We'll see if we make it out there alive.
Yes, it'll be a challenge. And hopefully, maybe you can get somebody from the cast to join you. If you could only get B Nguyen there for the BBB and B with B, that would be incredible.
She is the Pat. She created the B&B.
Okay. Yeah. She launched it. She inspired it. All right. Of course, we have so much going on in addition to everything with our Big Brother coverage and everything with the Survivor preseason. You want to make sure you're locked in. Subscribe to Rob as a Podcast. And hey, if you want to get even deeper into all of this stuff, why not join the Rob as a Podcast patron community for all of the additional perks that you get? We also have plenty of behind-the-scenes shows with the First Lady of Podcasting and myself, and our weekly calls with the patron, and much more. Find out everything we're doing when you go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Your support helps make all of this nonsense possible day in and day out. And David and Goliath.
Exactly. And look, we have patron representation on this season. It just shows, you know, what the initiative of the patrons and the great group of people that they are, how that can get you and how they might be represented on the show. Not to put the cart before the horse too much, but I'm excited to see what Nick and these 19 other people are going to bring come 21 days from now.
All right. So, Mike, we need to come up with exactly what I'm going to do to count down the days till David versus Goliath. Do we feel like we're walking away from this with an idea?
Well, I mean, I feel like you provided a good idea, and I think that Davey would personally advocate if we came up with an emoji, a mojo, for each and every castaway. And because we're going to get to know them more, both through First One Out and their videos, you figure out one symbol that represents who they are as a person. And who knows, maybe looking back in retrospect, the emoji might change to something very, very different.
All right,
by the end
I will work on that. Counting down the emoji of the day for the survivors. I will begin my journey tomorrow, Mike, on Thursday. So be on the lookout for that. All right. Thank you guys all for listening. Of course, Mike's on Twitter @AMikeBloomType. I'm @RobSisterino. Love hearing from you guys on social media. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.